Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen.
So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Indeed. Episode 208 is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are here live in living color. Getting funky like a monkey, if you will. Of course, I am Chris Featherstone. Follow us at Crave Wrestling on Twitter and Facebook, Crave Wrestling. We are there. We are everywhere. Ladies and gentlemen, we got a lot to talk about today on the road to WrestleMania. But we're going to do the real roadblock tonight. The roadblock comes in the form of the 2015 Ring of Honor ROH top prospect winner, none other than Feast Your Eyes on Donovan Dijak. How are you tonight, sir?
Oh, I'm very good. How are you?
Good. I hope you liked the intro.
I very much enjoyed the intro. It was quite festive.
Thank you very much. So, March Madness, is your bracket just completely obliterated?
I didn't fill out a bracket, and I haven't watched a second of March Madness. I don't know what it is, but ever since I started pro wrestling, I've had like zero time for actual sports, which is strange because before it was, you know, a huge portion of my time. Especially March Madness, I used to enjoy it very much, but now I feel like if I even watch even a minute of a game, that I'll become invested in something that I can't really commit enough time to. So I don't really watch it anymore. The only sports that I really have time for anymore are the New England Patriots on Sundays. So that's the only sport really I watch anymore.
Oh man, I am a very anti New England Patriot. Yeah, I do not like the Patriots at all. I'm a big Titans fan, and we've got some good acquisitions, man. We got we had about three or four good signings, which was starting this coming season, which I'm really really excited about. So yeah, I'm really excited about that. Do you have like a basketball team of your preference?
From I guess the day I was
college?
Born to about 2012 or 13, I was a pretty gigantic Boston Celtics fan.
Okay.
I followed them religiously, even throughout high school and college. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, once I started pro wrestling, I had zero time, especially, you know, weekdays at 7 p.m. or whenever the NBA typically plays their schedule. So I just really haven't had time to follow them since then. I mean, I still, you know, listen to sports talk radio and hear mm-hmm. about how they're doing and everything like that. But I unfortunately don't have time to watch the games anymore. From 2006 mm-hmm. to about 2011 or 12, I was the kind of fan who, like, you know, got season tickets and used to go to all the games and things of that nature. So that was a fun kind of portion of my life, but unfortunately now I don't really have time for it anymore, so it doesn't yeah. really happen.
So were you a college fan at all? I'd imagine you're a New England guy, so what, UMass?
Well, I mean, I went to UMass for a year, and I played football there. Once I was done with that, that was my redshirt season of football. I transferred to a smaller college named Bridgewater State, where I played both football and basketball. Nobody in this area really college sports are not big in New England. It's the professional sports that have the biggest following. Like our biggest colleges are Boston College, UMass, I guess Holy Cross kind of for basketball, maybe BU for hockey and Merrimack and stuff like that for hockey, but they don't have the biggest followings outside of their, you know, little regions. So yeah. So the big teams are the, you know, the Patriots, the Bruins, Red Sox, Celtics. That's what everybody here cares about, really.
Yeah. So did you grow up watching wrestling at all?
I did. Yeah. Maybe grow up isn't the right word. I started watching when I was about 12. That's kind of the time that we got cable television so I could get the USA Network. And I actually wasn't allowed to watch wrestling, so I kind of had to sneak around to watch it, especially for the first 2 or 3 years. Probably rightfully so, because the Attitude Era probably wasn't the most appropriate thing for a 12 or 13-year-old right. to be watching. But, yeah, so after that, I watched it pretty religiously from probably 99 to 2003, 2004, something like that. And that's when high school sports started to kind of take precedent on Monday nights. So so there was a gap there of about 8 or 9 years where I wasn't really watching the product too religiously, the WWE product anyway.
Yeah.
But then once I graduated, I started watching again because I had more free time on, you know, Mondays and Thursdays or Fridays or what have you. And so that was around 2011, I guess.
Okay. So 99 to 01 was still the Monday Night Wars. And, I mean, what did you – is there anything that you vividly remember or your biggest takeaways from that experience of watching the Monday Night Wars for 2 years?
I remember it was exciting. I personally didn't watch WCW at all. So mm-hmm. I wasn't one of the channel flipper type people mm-hmm. who would, you know, go back and forth. but I remember the product being, you know, particularly gripping on any given Monday, just because there was such fierce competition. I think in pro wrestling, oftentimes having competition like that is what drives and motivates both wrestlers and companies to you know, really up their game, so to speak, and put on the best product possible, as is with probably any, you know, competition or business. You know, it's always driven by motivation. So so that's my biggest takeaway. I mean, going back and the actual in-ring sort of wrestling wasn't the greatest in the history of the business, but the storylines and the way everything was kind of measured and thought out, and how each week had to be gripping in its own right was really what stood out to me.
Mm-hmm. Any wrestlers in particular that were your favorites?
Stone Cold Steve Austin was definitely at the top of the list for me. Just really captivating sort of stuff. At the time, just everything that I enjoyed about, you know, a character in the professional wrestling environment.
Mm-hmm. What made you want to start watching wrestling again?
Well, that would be CM Punk. He had a pipe bomb promo thing that was getting a lot of attention. So it happened to correspond with the time when I had just graduated from college, so I no longer had basketball or football to preoccupy my time. So I was sort of looking for something to do, and I saw some commercials that were advertising, you know, Monday Night Raw or whatever it happened to be, and that promo was generating a lot of buzz, whether it be on the internet or on commercials or however I happened to pick it up. So that's when I started watching again, and I guess I watched for maybe a year, give or take, before I started training.
And Brian Fury trains you, right?
That's correct. Yeah, he's he is currently and was at the time the owner of the New England Pro Wrestling Academy in North Andover, Massachusetts. At the time that I started training, Warbeard Hansen was also a full time trainer there. So I'm initially trained by both of them, but once Hansen had ROH commitments and things like that, where he couldn't commit full time to the school, that's Brian Fury basically took over as the full time head trainer of the school. And I've been attending every Tuesday and Thursday since.
Nice. So you graduated from the smaller school, the small university, right, Bridgewater State. And
yep,
what were you planning on doing? And what, you know, you say you got a revival of your interest in wrestling. What were you planning on doing, and why did you choose wrestling?
Well, my plan, I have both an undergraduate and a graduate degree in criminal justice, and I was hoping to use that to transition into federal law enforcement. So that's sort of the path that I started to take in 2011, 2012. I was an investigator for the public defender's office in Massachusetts, basically. Mm-hmm. I started wrestling kind of by chance. I mean, obviously I began watching the product and I was very invested and I was enjoying it very much. But it just kind of happened one day. I was doing some research, cause we were myself and my girlfriend at the time, now my fiance, we were transitioning to another gym because we weren't happy with the one we were at. So I was doing some research on a Gold's Gym in Nashua, New Hampshire, which is a town basically right next to where we were living at the time. So I naturally Googled Gold's Gym, Nashua, New Hampshire manager or something like that. And the first article that popped up was an article about Triple H, who apparently when he was training at Killer Kowalski's in Malden, Massachusetts, was a manager at Gold's Gym in Nashua, New Hampshire. So that's the article that popped up. I got to reading the article. I learned that Killer Kowalski's was in Malden, Massachusetts. I had heard of Killer Kowalski's, but I'd never known it was in Massachusetts. So I found that very interesting, especially because at the time I was working in Malden, Massachusetts on Pleasant Street where the facility was located. So I thought, oh, wow. You know, maybe I'll look into it. I thought maybe I'll look into it. So I did some research, and anyone can really do this right now. If you type in Killer Kowalski's, it'll probably take you to the original Killer Kowalski's website, which will link you to the website, will link you to the New England Pro website, because they all kind of transitioned into one another over the course of the past, you know, decade and a half or so. So that's how I got linked up at the school. I sent them an email that night because I was so interested, and I ended up visiting the school, I think, maybe a day or two later.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the school. I ended up saving up money over the next month. And then I went to a fantasy camp to try out the ring and everything. And I think I signed up for a lifetime membership like the next day or something like that. And I've been going ever since, including tonight.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. So you trained there. Was it a matter of someone, you know, seeing your potential and just kind of giving, like, what was the transition between that and Ring of Honor? Because I know that you still do indie work. You work with Chaotic Wrestling, if I'm not mistaken. What's the other one? Starts with a B. I don't remember. Beyond Wrestling, I believe.
Beyond Wrestling, probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
I work for a number of indies, actually. The transition to Ring of Honor is through their tryout camps that they hold maybe three or four times a year, something like that. Maybe a little more. So I'd gone to two of those. And after the second one, they liked what they saw. That was in, early 2014. I ended up getting an opportunity at a show that they had called Future of Honor. This one was the second Future of Honor they had, where I wrestled Moose. That went well. I ended up getting the opportunity later that year, or hearing about the opportunity later that year in December of 2014 with the Top Prospect Tournament, which ended up taking place in early 2015. Obviously, I ended up winning that tournament, and from there it just kind of transitioned into a contract with the company, which I've been very fortunate to be making my way through for the past year. And I've been incredibly fortunate to be surrounded by such talent, to be placed in the ring with such talent, especially so, you know, early in my career. I've still only been wrestling for, you know, about 3 years now. So, and I've been able to spend about half of that, you know, wrestling the best talent in the world. So I'm definitely very fortunate to be a part of Ring of Honor. I'm also very fortunate to be a part of Beyond Wrestling and Chaotic Wrestling and XWA and all sorts of promotions that are, you know, put me with the best talent in the world. You know, WXW in Germany, who's able to bring me over, Revolution Pro in England, who's bringing me back in April. I mean, I'm so fortunate to be continuously put in these wonderful situations. And I'm just grateful and fortunate that it's happened at such an early point in my pro wrestling career.
Yeah, I think what helped you, and I would say even from my end, because I mean, you know, I followed you. The Top Prospect Tournament was the first time I've ever known about you, and just the versatility of you, you know, as being, you know, what, 6'6", 6'7", and you know, just the type, the style of wrestling that I saw and still see in you. I think it didn't take long at all for people to really be hooked onto you, because they're thinking, like, you know, someone's, you know, 270 pounds, 6'7", 260, 270. You know, I'm not expecting them to do all types of springboard moves and things like that. So I think that was the type of style for your size is not common. So that really kind of got people hooked really, really fast. And then the Feast Your Eyes move, I think, I mean, when you first did that move, I said, whoa. I mean, I've never seen anyone do it as a finisher, especially, you know, the way that you do it, because you have the size and you have the height to really make it a devastating looking move. And how did that come about? Was it a matter of seeing some tape, or was it a matter of just kind of thinking about finishing moves in your head that's unique? Did someone give you the idea? How did that move become a finisher to you?
Yeah, it originated in class. Basically, I was just trying to think of new moves, which kind of always part of the, you know, after class sort of routine. You know, you hang out after class and you try different stuff, see what works, see what doesn't. Originally, I was with one of the kids I train with. His name's Christian Casanova, and I was just picking him up and trying different stuff. So originally it started as like a body slam, but like a backwards body slam. Mm-hmm. And then I just kind of landed him on his feet and gave him the, you know, the CM Punk Kenta GTS thing. So I was like, oh, this is interesting. I'll try using that. So from there it evolved into a dominator sort of thing, like Farouk's dominator type position. Mm-hmm. I used that for like a couple months with the knee strike, and then I switched over to a burning hammer, where I was using the left knee at first, throughout the top prospect tournament, and maybe for like a couple of the first months of ROH. And then finally I switched it over to the right knee, which is what I do now. And, you know, the more you do something, the more comfortable you get with it. Now I am able to throw it pretty proficiently at any point that I need it. So that's kind of how it evolved. Hopefully it's lost some of the, you know, the initial shock factor, but I think people still enjoy seeing it, especially on Ring of Honor, where, you know, I wasn't winning very often, so they certainly didn't see the move very often, but every time I broke it out, it still gets a pretty good reaction. So I think, you know, it's one of those things that once people see in person, they're probably more impressed than when they see it on television or whatever. So, you know, kind of like, you know, the Brock Lesnar's F5 or the Undertaker's Tombstone. It's just one of those moves that people are probably going to enjoy seeing for, you know, however long I'm going to be doing it, I guess.
Yeah. Now, you got a lot of positive reaction from the fans when you won the top prospect tournament, defeating Will Ferrara, who also at the time was a really big underdog, fan favorite. Now, that allowed you to face Jay Lethal, but somehow you were written to join the House of Truth. And to me, honestly, it was interesting because you relinquished your title opportunity to join the House of Truth. Now, how was that written in? What was the thought behind that? Because to be honest with you, it was a little weird to me. And I honestly think that your time with the House of Truth got a little stale. It really didn't lead you too much. I mean, I know you were teamed with Jay Diesel for a while, but that really didn't go too far. How was that kind of created? What was the thought process behind that to kind of elevate you?
The thought process, in a storyline sense was that, you know, Truth Martini, you know, convinced me that I didn't have any sort of feasible chance against Jay Lethal, which kind of makes sense considering that he's, you know, beaten everyone for the past, you know, 2 or 3 years or whatever it happens to be. And that, you know, joining his House of Truth would be more beneficial. I think from a booking standpoint, just being around Jay Lethal and Truth Martini was the thought process of being beneficial, which it's hard to argue with because I was able for a year to, you know, wrestle pretty much everyone that Lethal was wrestling, you know, with the exception of AJ Styles because he had a back injury, but I was scheduled to wrestle him. So basically anytime Lethal was feuding with someone, I was feuding with someone. And then towards the end, we started tagging together against, you know, some of the best tag teams in the world. So, you know, even though the role was sort of, you know, secondary, obviously to Jay, the experience, I mean, I got to wrestle, you know, Roderick Strong, Michael Elgin, the Young Bucks, the Bullet Club, Red Dragon, you know, all sorts of, you know, top level talent. in Ring of Honor. So from that sense, it was you know, obviously a great experience. And just being around, you know, Jay Lethal and Truth Martinez obviously has the intended effect after you know, a short amount of time. And then obviously with the trip to Europe, that made a good transitionary period for me to make my way out of the House of Truth.
Yeah. And it was an interesting separation there. And I think that to me, watching that, I was happy to see that, because, I mean, you make perfect sense as far as the opportunity that it gave you. But I think as a character, just as far as the evolution of your character, and because it was so hot before you joined the House of Truth, it just seems like it kind of sizzled, you know, a little bit and kind of fizzed out just a little bit. But I think the separation was good with what we saw. And it kind of came full circle too, and I did like that, because you were a fan favorite, you joined the House of Truth, and then you split. But nothing really came from the split. Is there something brewing, or was it just a split and you kind of doing your own thing? Because we haven't seen you on TV for a while. You plan on coming back soon?
Yeah, I'm not sure of the exact timeline. I mean, I don't want to do any spoilers, but I'm going to be on television as far. I was at the last TV tapings, and for anyone who orders the VODs or buys the DVDs, they saw me at on the last the Philly I think it's called the Conquest Tour. So I came out and had some interaction on that VOD. If anyone wants to go purchase that, they can do that right now. It's available. It just became available last week, I think, at ROHwrestling.com. And in terms of television, I'm fairly certain that I will be making my return to ROH TV very, very, very shortly.
Nice. Yeah, man, we need some Dijak in our life. Because,
no, I agree.
Yeah,
and I think you and everybody else will be pleasantly surprised with the direction that the character's heading in.
Nice. Yeah, I think that's a good promise. I think that's a very promising statement, which I'm going to hold you to.
But, you got it.
Yeah, that's good, man. So I watched you live. And I took the trip to Dayton and saw you at the beginning of the year, or late last year. I think that's what you went against Elgin in Dayton. And
yes.
Yeah, awesome match, man. I think that was probably the match of the night. The people were really, really into that match. And I mean, just Elgin, period. You know, just he's just a workhorse. With your short but very productive time in ROH, who would you say that, you know, maybe one or two matches that you remember the most that just really stood out of being your best?
There's three that come to mind. The Elgin one probably is right at the top of that list. Probably the top of that list, just because I feel like that's probably. The first and maybe one of the only times where I felt like I was given both, where I was given basically like a platform that was kind of just, I'm not sure how to phrase this. When you're given, like time to perform in professional wrestling, it can make a difference. Like it's one, like any amount of time is obviously, you know, cherished, you know, even if it's just 2 minutes of doing something, you got to make the most of it. But
yeah,
if you're trusted with, you know, 15, 20 minutes, I don't remember how long the match was, but I remember it was, you know, a main event length of time. To me, that's like my wheelhouse, you know, that's where I can really, really, you know, shine and do all the things that, you know, I feel like I'm capable of doing in terms of, entertaining an audience. So that one in particular, I remember was specifically a time where I felt like I was given that opportunity and I took advantage of it. A couple other times where the two main events that I've been involved with, which was the myself and Lethal against the Young Bucks in Florida, and then myself the House of Truth against the Bullet Club, and that was in Milwaukee, Turner Hall, I think, in Milwaukee. So those three matches really stick out to me as you know, matches where I was able to, you know, really, make an impact, and it wasn't just like, some sort of match to build the story for something else indirectly. It felt like in those three matches that like the focus was just on this, you know, this moment. And those are the matches where I feel like, where it's the expectation is for everyone in the match to shine, and hopefully I made a positive impact on in the fans' eyes anyway.
Yeah, I think so. I really liked your match with Moose. That was really, really, really good match. And just the very fact that you both are very similar styles. You're both, you know, tall. He's a little bigger than you are, but you know, you both are tall and big, and very agile. I don't know. To me, a Moose Dijak team would be very, very interesting. But I like you both as singles competitors because I think you both have a lot of steam and promise towards you both. And I think it would be awesome. So let's talk really quick about some WrestleMania moments. What WrestleMania moments do you remember the most?
Well, from my childhood, I would say anything involving Stone Cold and The Rock is probably what sticks out the most in my mind. That was kind of the rivalry that kind of brought me into professional wrestling and really, stuck into my head.
Yeah, the three WrestleManias, right?
Yeah, in terms of more specifically for me would be 15 and 17. Those are the ones that I watched live and thoroughly enjoyed. I would say that going back and having watched, you know, all the WrestleMania matches, the ones that I enjoy the most are probably the Shawn Michaels Undertaker series of matches. Those are, you know, just after having done, you know, wrestling training and everything like that, and after, you know, being in once you start, you know, training to be a pro wrestler, you obviously become a bigger fan of pro wrestling. So once my fandom, I suppose, took that next step, that's when those matches started to become really special for me. So those would be the moments per se that kind of stick out for me.
Oh yeah, 17. To me, 17 was the best WrestleMania of all time. I don't know. How old was I in WrestleMania 17? I was in my early 20s, I believe. And yeah, it was just absolutely incredible. Late teens, early 20s, something like that. But yeah, it was absolutely amazing. And just the spectacle that came with just the whole babyface versus babyface main event. Rock and Austin were both babyfaces at the time. Two of the hugest, just large in life, gigantic names. And then Austin making the turn, you know, the shocking turn. You know, who would have thunk that Austin turned heel and sided with Vince? And just, yeah, it was absolutely incredible. I totally agree with you there. So, yeah, man, NXT is really, really becoming popular. Can you imagine yourself there at all?
Well, not currently. I'm currently under contract with Ring of Honor.
Yeah, of course not. But what I'm saying as far as wrestling with people like Austin Aries and Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe was there for a little bit when he made his transition from TNA to NXT. He was in ROH for a little bit. Did you have any interaction with him?
Not at Ring of Honor. I mean, he was in the back at ROH, so I like met him and shook his hand. I was able to wrestle him though for a company called Northeast Wrestling.
Okay.
So that was obviously a great opportunity. That was last towards the end of last summer. Able to wrestle him. We had a good match. New York, I think, something like that. Maybe Ohio. I'm not sure, but but yeah, it was awesome. I learned a lot by wrestling him. Austin Aries, I've never had the opportunity to meet, but yeah, their roster is loaded. It feels like everybody's roster nowadays is pretty loaded.
That's
so
true.
So I mean I'm obviously very early in my, hopefully, you know, knock on wood, early in my pro wrestling career. So you're never quite sure where it's going to take you, but
sure.
You know, it feels like everybody in every company is so talented that I just can't wait to wrestle, you know, all of them and, you know, wherever the tides may take me. I can't really, you know, predict that, but I do know that the talent is at an all time high right now.
Oh yeah. There's so many, you know, the three major companies in the States, of course, WWE, TNA, and ROH, just amazing rosters. If you had one WrestleMania match, WrestleMania 32 is a week and a half away, about a week and a half away. If you had one person to wrestle at WrestleMania 32 right now, who would it be and why?
Cesaro.
Ooh, nice choice. Why is that?
Because I feel that he's the best professional wrestler, the best in-ring professional wrestler in the world right now. I mean, in my opinion of all time, but certainly right now.
Yeah, that would be, that's a really good choice. That came from left field to me because I would have never imagined you say that choice. I don't know who you would have chosen, but I think that is an excellent choice. Yeah, Cesaro versus Donovan Dijak, that just sounds very interesting on paper. So if there was one ROH person, that I think that is a good first choice. If there's one ROH person currently that you would choose, who would it be?
Jay Lethal.
Oh, cool. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes Jay Lethal the sense. I think Cesaro is the most talented in-ring professional wrestler in the world today, and I feel that Jay Lethal is the best all-around professional wrestler in the world today. So those are those are fairly easy top two choices for me.
Yeah, yeah, seemingly, and I think those are very excellent top two choices. Jay Lethal is actually I have like a Featherstone ranking, like some type of, you know, how you say you weren't much of a WCW watcher back in the day, but back in the early 90s they used to have this top five, this weekly top five, and a lot of times Eric Bischoff would do the top five, or Gordon Soley or Jim Ross. And, you know, you have the top five U.S. champions, you know, and the contenders and so forth. And I kind of have that in my mind. I have like a top five. And for probably the past, I'd say about year and a half, I'd say Jay Lethal has been either the number one or number two slot pretty consistently for me as my favorite wrestler. So yeah, I'm a big Jay Lethal supporter, and I think that he is, no offense, I think you'll be there, but I think he's the greatest wrestler that ever lived, as he says. So so big big shout out to, kudos to Jay Lethal. But more importantly, man, awesome time speaking with you, and man, just 3 years in the business, not a lot of people can say that within 3 years they've won the ROH Top Prospect Tournament. they've got to face the, you know, a great selection, a wide selection of the greatest in-ring performers that wrestling has to offer now. And just, I mean, this is just this is just scratching the surface of what the world is going to see for Donovan Dijak, man. And I really appreciate you taking the time to spend with us here at Crave Wrestling and the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, and all the listeners listening live right now. And let us know what you got coming up soon under the pike.
Well, I've got some appearances coming up with Ring of Honor. I'll be in Dallas for Supercard of Honor. I'm not sure in what context. Hopefully that context will be announced soon, but maybe it won't. I don't know. I guess that remains to be seen. Before that, I have Blitzkrieg Pro Wrestling in Connecticut this Friday, and then I got a whole slew of stuff in April. The first of which is Cold Fury, which is the biggest show of the year for Chaotic Wrestling on the 8th. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And then the whole remainder of April, which ends with an appearance at the first Ring of Honor appearance in New England in a very long time. So I'm very much looking forward to that in West Warwick, Rhode Island on the April 30th.
Nice. So where can the people follow you on social media?
Everything's Donovan Dijak. It's all DonovanDijak. Twitter's at Donovan Dijak. Facebook.com/DonovanDijak. Instagram is DonovanDijak44, which is the number 44. ProWrestlingTees.com/DonovanDijak if you want to pick up any of my merchandise. And then, more importantly than all that, is the monthly fundraisers that I run now in conjunction with Tommaso Ciampa of NXT and Mike Bennett of TNA Impact. This month, I think it was GoFundMe.com/FlintResponse, which is still currently running. Our goal was $1,000, which we recently hit, much thanks to the social media support of Kevin Owens, who retweeted us, and then we pretty quickly after that reached our goal. So right now it's at $1,000. We can always use more. Obviously the people of Flint, Michigan need help with their water situation. So that's what we're doing this month. Next month we'll have a new one, and obviously that'll be announced on all of our social media platforms, so you can keep an eye out for that.
Fantastic. Again, at Donovan Dijak, DonovanDijak, and DonovanDijak44 on Instagram, right?
That's right.
Awesome. And 44 is your sports number, right?
It's my college basketball number. Yep, I wear it on all of my gear currently. It's on my butt. It's kind of hard to see because it says "Feast Your Eyes" over it, but there is a 44 there.
Awesome, man. Appreciate your time, Donovan, and best wishes to you, man. It's just scratching the surface, and you know, this time next year, I'm looking forward to see come, you know, WrestleMania season. I guess we can say this time of wrestling just across the board. I'm looking forward to see what next year brings this time, and yeah, man, I'm just waiting for a title of in ROH. I know that it's coming soon, man. I know that you're going to be involved in some really heavy stuff. Continue to be involved in some really heavy stuff in ROH, and we're definitely looking forward to that, man.
Oh, definitely. Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. You have a great night.
Thanks. You too.
Bring what you got. The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at it.
Four corners, free, on mine. Let's go. the whole squad is making it clear we've taken this year. You know who we are, but you don't know why we're here. So this is where the big boys play. These big boys play like who defies the living God? Get out the big boys' way. Outsiders with the swoop in. We live as kings, you see in us. But our third man waits in the wings. And when the time is right, we shock him with the proper attack. I go for Dolo, but ain't solo. Cut the promo in black. Hollywood, Hendrix, Frizzle, pinning them to the mat.
And I'm Das Wunderkind with the strength of 100 men. With one intent, to see the will fulfilled of the one who sent his son to give himself. But you rap about your gas and your rags torture. White coffins when I drop a bomb. My mic's awesome, never lost faith. You in all space, you can all skate. Suffer but never crippled. No bin walls in my cross face. From here to Saturday, raving, anticipating. I was frostbit, now I am glacier. Mixed with some Vader. Get to hawking with these animals. Using God for my defense. In Alabama, we jamming. That's beautiful. Bobby Eaton, me and Priest. We the dangerous alliance. Nah, the Harlem Heat. Tie the do-rag before we do battle. You're talking sheep. You all what you speak. This too sweet.
Till the genre is took back. We repping that work pack. The foundation's shaking. No mistaking. Yeah, we shook that. Trust in God we trust. Pushing forward. Never look back. Meekness ain't at all weakness. Some people mistook that. Stamping out this crook rap. He turning the power on. On the razor's edge. Leg drop after a power bomb. Tired of the lies, man. We bringing the truth through. Diligent and fruitful. The owners in our group too. It's good to be king. Sold out, this war is brutal.
We playing them war games. Our army go move too. You crew, I'm in the Raptors with a bat in my hand. And stand to shatter all your plans so they don't matter. In the grand scheme, it's that easy. We tag teaming, Steiner brothers, we love it. Demand the win, establish it. This the clash of the champions.
This is where the big boys play, huh? We ain't here to play.
Before we go on, I definitely want to acknowledge the reported 30, even, you know, possibly more unfortunate victims of the Brussels terrorist attacks. It's just such a really horrible and just an insensical way to just to really carry out something of any type of disagreement or any statement. I think it's absolutely cowardice, and I think it's ridiculous that someone would decide to do something like that, even at the expense of their own lives. So with that being said, I definitely want to give a moment of silence to the victims of the Brussels terrorist attacks. All right, Derek. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm here. Hanging in there. Awesome. Awesome interview, as always, Chris. You bring the best out of anybody that comes on this show. And it's good to know he's a good old-fashioned New England boy. They love their professional sports. They love their professional sports. But here, college football is all we care about. So, and that's you know, and that's, I like that diversity amongst the states, you know, in your region of the states. You know, like I said, you know, Columbus, Central Ohio, all we care about is Buckeye football. You know, Buckeye basketball, yeah, it's okay, but, you know, you got your Bengals fans, your Browns fans. But Ohio State football just trumps everything, and it should with everybody in the nation. Everybody in the nation should just love Ohio State. So that's what I'm going to say about that. But again, I mean, just diving into, you know, everything that he was saying about just, you know, Stone Cold and just how, you know, that's the guy that really got him and how he didn't really start watching it until his, you know, family got cable, which that's kind of my story, even though I go back a little farther because, you know, it used to be on Fox, but then they took it off cable. I went a few years without being able to watch wrestling. I'd read about it in the magazines. But, finally got a satellite dish, Monday Night Raw, and the rest is history. So, I mean, awesome, awesome. I mean, I hope he does as well as he can. I mean, he's an absolutely true talent and just absolutely flabbergasted to have him on our show. And wonderful interview, man. Great job.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Yeah. You know what? He's just really someone who I wanted on my show. You know, it's just, This is one of those things, man. You see things in people. I remember Jericho had a cheeseburger on last year or earlier this year, and I respect the heck out of that because, you know, I kind of feel that way with Dijak. Like, I just there's just so much rich, raw talent in both Cheeseburger and Donovan Dijak. They're very early in their careers. I think Dijak even earlier. And just, you know, I think Dijak's like 28, so he's still in his 20s, still a young guy. Just so much rich talent in him, so much unearthed talent that just is coming in him. And just even with a year and a half of, you know, his really making a huge statement in ROH, you know, I definitely wanted him to be on the show. You know, I'm really excited to actually say that, you know, he was on the show because, you know, he's one of those guests that, you know, we have legends. We had the Ganyas, we had the Jim Brunzels and so forth. But there's certain people, like I remember Hanson. Hanson was in this position too when we had him a couple of years ago, because he won the Top Prospect Tournament. He won the 2014 Top Prospect Tournament. And it was really interesting that when I had Hanson on here, it was the same thing. You know, Hanson was around. He's been wrestling for quite some time. I think it was probably about a dozen years or so. But, you know, he really had an opportunity to really make a name for himself, really get in his niche. And he won the top prospect tournament. There was a lot of promise to him in ROH. And, you know, I love grabbing interviews like that. Same thing with Moose. You know, same situation. Moose was very early in his ROH career. I love those interviews because you have rich talent who I know and people know has so much promise to them. And, you know, interestingly enough, you know, Hanson's a tag team champion right now in ROH. So, you know, I just knew it. It's one of those things that you just knew that he had so much rich potential in him. Same thing with Moose. I mean, oh, man. People say sky's the limit. I always say sky's the platform because there's just no limit to Moose. He had so much amazing talent, and he's very over with the fans. And Dijak falls right there. I mean, just so much amazing talent. And just really being only in the business for less than 3 years, it's just so much left. So I'm really, really excited about the direction of Donovan Dijak when it comes to professional wrestling. Speaking of professional wrestling, let me start off with a trivia question to you. We're going to go into WrestleMania. Me? Yes. We're going to go back to our WrestleMania trivia. What was the result of the Billy Jack Haynes versus Hercules match at WrestleMania 3? What was the result of that match?
Oh, the result, I want to remember, Billy Jack Haynes won. It was a full Nelson match. And if I want to be correct, Billy Jack Haynes won that match.
Double count out.
Double
count out. Yes, absolutely. Well, the Dijak interview and that trivia question that you got wrong is a lot more exciting than Raw. So we're going to go through Raw relatively briskly, and we're going to spend some time, you know, talking about the rest of the Divas statistics that I was talking about last week. Kudos to Adam Martin from WrestleView.com. He's the senior editor and webmaster at WrestleView.com, who actually broke that Stan Hansen would be inducted by Vader. So that's awesome stuff. We'll get to that here in a moment. But yeah, awesome interview. And next week and the week after, we're going to have two editions of WrestleMania Roundtable. We're bringing that back this year, the WrestleMania Roundtable. We're going to celebrate our four-year anniversary on April the 12th. Got a special guest for April the 12th, our four-year anniversary. So I'm really excited about that. And like I said, next week and the week after, mark your calendars, WrestleMania Roundtable. So we've got some really fun guests coming back, and it should be very, very, very interesting conversation that we will have. And I will, of course, have some trivia ready for each and every one of them. So let's get to Raw. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Stephanie McMahon with an in-ring promo. Roman Reigns interferes. Now, I do want to spend some time on this real quick. Here's the issue. Here's the issue that I'm experiencing here with Roman Reigns. Now, I'm getting closer and closer to waving the white flag and saying, you know what, just go ahead and turn him heel. They did it with The Rock. It worked. It was probably the best decision that the WWE made with The Rock, because he was just a really vanilla cookie cutter type of baby face with the spaghetti type of flares, and it was just really weird. Horrible baby face initially. The heel turn was absolutely amazing. I was a big fan of that. Absolutely. Big, big, big fan of that. And so here's the thing. With that, Roman Reigns, he can potentially make that same move. However, he was already a somewhat established heel initially. He had a heel run from, when he came, when he debuted at, Survivor Series of 2013, I believe it was. That was during the CM Punk Championship run. So that was 29. Rock won it at January of 13 to lead to Rock Cena 2 at 29. So it was 2012 that they debuted, November 2012, during CM Punk's title reign. So about a year and a half, he was a solid heel with the Shield, and they broke up. They broke up spring of 14. I think it was right after
summer of 14.
Payback. Yeah, June. Yeah, it was right after. It was the Raw after Payback. So that was a year and a half, a little over a year and a half. So he's been a baby face for almost 2 years now. And last year was a really trying time for him. It worked at the end. It was one of those things that you could tell. And the same thing with the Philly crowd. He got booed. People just want to have their, they want to have their say. They want to troll. They want to do that. But at the same time, I do understand why people are booing him, because they're not booing Roman Reigns. I get a lot of this. I get a whole lot of people saying this. I see it all the time, and it's true. They're not necessarily booing Roman Reigns. They're booing Vince McMahon and the writing staff on behalf of Roman Reigns, sadly. But there's so much promise in that guy, and there's a glimpse of hope of him being a Austin-style babyface still. And this promo showed it. Just the no-nonsense. He's coming from the ramp now, which is a very, very important nuance. No more coming from the crowd. No more "you think you know me" Edge entrance. I'm totally fine with that. I hope he doesn't come from the crowd at WrestleMania either. And so Stephanie McMahon's a heat magnet. Him against Stephanie, which worked, at the end of last year, really helped put him over as a babyface, people cheering him. They booed him initially, and then, the only thing it took was him blocking the mic, and he started getting cheered. So people, it just really seems like people want to get behind Roman Reigns. But the booking is so atrocious that it's really tough for them to. But if they keep this, he's almost to the point of damaged goods right now as a babyface. But you know, it's just a glimpse of hope. I see that there's promise, and then, you know, my hope is retracted because when he does like a ridiculous smile or just takes so long on the promo, it's just ridiculous. I think this is a really good first segment for Roman Reigns, though, because it was needed for us to see that there's hope and just reviving him as that no-nonsense face, you know, similar to his heelish antics on the Shield, but more of an anti-hero. I think it was a good first segment. I don't know if it's too late, but at least it was, it showed some hope of they could do something right with Roman Reigns and they keep him in this direction.
Oh, man. The thing about it is he came out with the promo. He doesn't own his promos because, you know, Stephanie McMahon comes out, Triple H isn't going to be here. He comes out, says his piece, and there was nothing. That was it. I mean, there was nothing to take away from it. I mean, the dude is so boring. I mean, the best thing he could do was turn heel. That's the only thing I can see to keep this thing alive. I don't know anybody that's a diehard Roman Reigns fan within my little wrestling posse crew or whatever. This, nobody talks about him. Nobody really cares. The only thing they say is, yeah, they're just ramming him down our throats. And I agree with you. Vince McMahon, the booking staff are just horrible with him. But it's just, again, he doesn't own his promos. When he's on stage, he's just there smiling, doing a stupid grin. He's got to do something. I mean, flip the bird. Do whatever you need to do to get something, get a reaction. I mean, it's coming down through the crowd. I was never a huge fan of that because, again, that's stealing from Edge. It's been done. He doesn't need to do that anymore, and I'm glad that he's not. Is that a step in the right direction? I'm not too sure. But the thing is, he just does not – he's just there. That's the thing. He just shows up. There's Roman Reigns. People cheer because that's what they're programmed to do. But it's not a cheer. Like, people don't go ecstatic like, you know, when Stone Cold would come out. I mean, the place went nuts. You don't have that with Roman Reigns. I don't know if you ever will have that with Roman Reigns. So he's the most paper booking thing I've ever seen in my life. And it's, you know, if he goes away with WrestleMania, he's got the title, then what? Turn that guy heel. Maybe he can do something with that. I mean, he's never been a heel on his own once he was with the Shield, but again, yeah. The dude just shows up there, that's it. And it's nothing, you leave scratching your head like, okay, what big whoop, what's next? That shouldn't happen.
Good point.
And yeah. That's it.
I agree. You know, you're making some good points, man. You know, we'll see what comes up the pike as far as what they're going to have for Roman Reigns. I'm intrigued. You know, I'm intrigued to see. I mean, at least he's infectious. At least he draws, and that's what Vince is looking for, man. He does draw. What type of match? Oh, this is an open question. What type of match did Roddy Piper and Adrian Adonis have at WrestleMania 3? What type of match did Roddy Piper and Adrian Adonis have at WrestleMania 3? Okay, Jericho and AJ. Here's the thing. I posted the post-match thing on the Crave Wrestling Facebook page. So you're having these people, AJ Styles. Well, you're coming out there on SmackDown. He did the same thing, which caused a roll-up victory by Kevin Owens. Same thing happens on Raw, roll-up victory by Kevin Owens. So AJ Styles gets upset, challenges Jericho, who he's already beat 2 out of 3 times, but Jericho refuses in the post interview backstage. This and talk about your convoluted, ridiculous. I just don't see it. I mean, listen, the match will blow the stadium, blow the roof off of Dallas, and Dallas, you know, it's going to be amazing. It's absolutely going to be an amazing match, and it's going to tear the roof off the place, and I know it is. It's going to be one of the best matches of the night. I have a feeling. I get it. It's WrestleMania. They're going to go all out. This match was amazing, by the way, between AJ Styles and Kevin Owens. Definitely had an opportunity to be the match of the year, and the screwy finish just messed it all up. I mean, I just don't understand why you're building Jericho Styles as if to be intrigued when they're already faced each other 3 times and once at a pay-per-view. I mean, the first match of AJ Styles was him beating Jericho cleanly in his debut match. I'm not very intrigued about match number four, which most likely will be won by AJ Styles again. It's just the artistry and the creativity of builds from WWE has been so embarrassing, and this is one of them. I get it. I get that they wanted to do something different, turn Jericho heel, add another layer to the feud, but don't wrestle three matches then. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. If Jericho would have lost to AJ Styles in his first match, which I still don't think was smart, because you just got to build to something like that. But if Jericho would have lost to AJ Styles his first match, the right booking would have gotten people to totally forget that. It would have been, you know, passing of the torch. Jericho loses to AJ. It's not really a passing of the torch because, unfortunately, Jericho loses to just about anyone. But just for the sake of Jericho's legacy and respect and high amount of respect toward the wrestling, I guess creative. I guess I'm using his terms very loosely because not his respect. And I'm a Jericho guy. People know, but just his booking, the way that his win loss record has been very has tarnished his career on the WWE for sure. But he's a respected talent. So with that, you're passing the torch in that sense to AJ Styles. Jericho respects AJ Styles. Jericho helps AJ Styles. You know, New Day could have jumped him. He could have went against Kofi Kingston or Big E or Xavier Woods. Jericho could have made the save, and then they could have went to the tag team feud with Y2AJ. Could have made more money out of those shirts. It could have went a further time. We should have got the legitimacy of Y2AJ before the Fastlane. They shouldn't have went against each other at Fastlane. It should have been Y2AJ against the New Day, period. It should have been that. We would have got just enveloped in this tag team and in this feud, because they had a really good match on Raw a couple of weeks ago. And then if you wanted to do the turn, you would have had Jericho turn on AJ based on that very first match. Not two matches later, you would have had Jericho turn on AJ based on that first match and feeling a sense of embarrassment and wanting to get retribution in a heelish way. That would have been the perfect way, and a much better way, at least a much better way to book it, instead of I'm mad at AJ Styles because he gets more cheers than me. Such a ridiculous and horrible way to book a feud. We're supposed to buy into Jericho wanting to get retribution against AJ Styles because he gets more cheers than he does. What type of nonsense is that?
It's stupid. And the thing that I hate about it so much is, to me, I'm a Y2J guy, have been for years. I'm tired of him. I want him to go away. The booking has just made it to where I don't enjoy seeing him anymore. If I have to hear him chant AJ Styles one more time, I'm going to lose it. There's just this Y2J and AJ Styles tag team. I would have liked to have seen it last up until maybe SummerSlam or something. Just make it a huge, dominant tag team, and then let the jealousy and crap come in. But then you got Y2J, oh, I'm jealous because they chant AJ Styles more than they chant my name, boo-hoo-hoo. Chris Jericho, at this point, you've got nothing else to prove. You are the man. Yeah. You are the legend. You are Chris Jericho. And, again, I don't want to see Chris Jericho anymore. I'm tired of it. It's dumb. I can't stand what they're doing to his character. I'm surprised that he's even putting up with it. Yeah, he respects AJ Styles. But the thing is, AJ Styles doesn't need Chris Jericho to do this for him, and Chris Jericho doesn't need it because it's killing his character and it's making me turn sour against Chris Jericho. So this thing, I don't know what again, we go back to it's horrible booking. I love Chris Jericho with all my heart. The dude is phenomenal at everything he does. But I don't like to see him anymore. I want him to go away, retire, do whatever he needs to do, because this is just killing. It's worse than you losing all this time. It's just, it makes you look like just a pathetic loser. And that's it. It just, I'm sick of it. And I don't want to see, I want Chris Jericho to go away for a while, maybe come back for his final whatever, swan song match later, maybe SummerSlam. But go away for a while, because you're really just souring everything that I like about you. Yeah, period.
Sadly. Very sadly. Good job. The correct answer. Hair versus hair match, WrestleMania 3. All right, so Ambrose, Terry Funk segment. I mean, it was cool to see Terry Funk back. You know, I suppose these segments are adding some type of, you know, interest to this hardcore or no DQ match. I guess I don't want to say hardcore anymore, I suppose. But no DQ match with Ambrose and Lesnar. To me, to be honest with you, I think it'll be very interesting to add both of them to the match. If like have them, you know, do a run in at the end of the match and help, you know, Ambrose, you know, with Lesnar. It'll be interesting if Foley comes out and actually bring the barbed wire bat to him, and Terry Funk comes out and actually brings the chainsaw to him. That would be a nice little addition to that. I think this needs all the bells and whistles, because, I mean, just this match on paper, Lesnar and Ambrose. I mean, Lesnar has shown week after week that he could just manhandle Ambrose with one hand tied behind his back, blindfolded. So just on paper, just this does not seem like an even match whatsoever. But adding Foley, adding Terry Funk to come out, bringing their weapons of choice to help out Ambrose would be very an interesting take to this match at WrestleMania, and it'll make it a lot more memorable.
It'll make it good, and I'd like to see both of those guys come out. But what's Ambrose going to do with the chainsaw? Cut Brock's arms and legs off?
Yeah,
can't do that in WWE. They're PC. They can't do that anymore. Maybe they would have gotten away with it back in 97. Who knows? But anyway, yeah, so it could use all the bells and whistles it needs, like you said. But, you know, on paper it looks weak. But, yeah, you know, something – they're going to pull out all the stops. I think it's really going to be a great WrestleMania moment for Ambrose. Probably not as much for Brock, but
yeah,
it'll be good. Yeah. So I like to have this, see those guys come in.
Yeah, he brings the chainsaw out, have JR go out there and commentate.
My God!
Oh, my God!
He just cut his arm off! Oh, my God! What the
Somebody heck? Call his family!
Somebody call an ambulance! He's bloody everywhere! Stone Cold!
But, yeah, good old JR. So Big E and Rusev, I was actually happy that Big E won the match, because they tried to just throw a Big E Rusev feud, you know, countless amount of times. It seemed like a couple of years ago they even made Big E a Patriot, and he would just lose over and over to Rusev. So it was a great moment for me to see Big E actually pin Rusev. So it was a good match. And this transition to from heel to face, I've adapted to it a lot quicker than I thought I was. But just the promo beforehand was just really cheesy and went way too long. But the match quality was good.
Yeah, match quality was great. I mean, the New Day, to me, they've always kind of been a shade of gray, because they're always that you don't want to like them because, you know, they're considered heel, but then they always brought a smile to your face. You've always enjoyed watching them come out. Their promos, the bootios, I'm kind of over that. It's kind of stupid. But the rest of it, yeah, New Day can do what they do. Good props, Big E, for beating her pin and Rusev. So good for that. You know, New Day is the New Day, and there's nothing else on the WWE roster like them at this moment, which is good because they stand alone on their own little platform.
By God, somebody get an ambulance!
Someone call Foley. He's dead.
He just cut off his darn leg.
They need to bring Sable out to disrupt Ambrose and have her pull off her gown and have her body paint on.
No. No, thanks. They say that for the bedroom.
Maybe 15 years ago.
Yeah. Big Show in-ring promo interrupted by Social Outcast. This was just a nothing segment just to build up the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. Just, you know, this really didn't do much. Your boy Fandango came back. You texted me.
Horrible embarrassment.
Yeah.
I was so excited.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, but, you know, loses to Jericho, and Jericho's, you know, trying to sell this "I never lost to Fandango," which, yeah, you did. So we talked about that as far as challenging AJ coming out and challenging. So here's the thing: Zack Ryder and Sin Cara and Goldust was the three people that was chosen by Kevin Owens. We got to kind of move it here, and he had the opportunity to make the triple threat match. He changed it up, which was very interesting and heelish and conniving and brilliant of him, which was very interesting. So it ended up being Ryder, Sin Cara, and Goldust. I was waiting for a multi-man ladder match. It just seemed like the writing was on the wall for it, and this is how it was set up. So basically it's going to be Ryder, Sin Cara, Stardust, Zayn, Ziggler, and The Miz against each other, as well as Kevin Owens. Now, I'm all fine for this, for the concept, because like I've said before in years past on the show, I think that it was, you know, the fact that it's missing that Money in the Bank ladder match, I think that there was something that we enjoyed and we looked forward to as being exclusive to WrestleMania. So I'm liking these Intercontinental title ladder matches. The people, on the other hand, you know, there's reports that it was supposed to be Neville instead of Zack Ryder. No offense to Zack Ryder. I like the Hype Bros. I think that they're doing well with them in NXT. Had some good matches on Superstars, but Zack Ryder, what has Sin Cara done? And I like Sin Cara. It brings a diversity. He finally gets his WrestleMania moment match. That character's they've been trying to work on that. The original Sin Cara Mystico just kind of botched it and just made it a horrible investment. So finally they're giving him an opportunity. You know, Miz is a great, solid mid-card heel, so, you know, he can be injected in there. Ziggler as well. But, and then Zayn hasn't really earned his stripes yet, so to speak. I mean, he eliminated Kevin Owens at Royal Rumble, so I guess that counts. But It's an interesting choice of people. I mean, Ryder, Sin Cara, and Zayn, I'm just kind of leery about those choices. It's, I mean, Stardust loses all the time. How does he deserve an Intercontinental title shot? I guess since he's been Intercontinental champions, Cody Rhodes, I just kind of automatically put them in the match. It's just it's a weird combination to me.
It's a dumb combination. I mean, the only one in there that deserves to be in there is Ziggler, The Miz, I give you that, and KO, Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens is going to win that match, and maybe Ziggler might, which is great. Ziggler's been an Intercontinental champion a few times, so, I mean, that's – yeah, but it's just a cluster of misfits that don't belong in there. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. I mean, just make it between Ziggler and Kevin Owens. It'd be a much better match, in my opinion.
Yeah, like I said,
except
like
you've seen that
nice
match.
Concept. Trying to bring everybody on the card, and I can respect that. I mean, you know, the biggest payday of the year, I can respect that. I definitely can. But you have the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal for that. I mean, I'm sure that you can grab three people out of the Battle Royal that should have been inserted in this match more. I mean, again, you know, not to throw shade on Zack Ryder or Sin Cara or Sami Zayn. And I really like Sami Zayn a lot. I mean, Sami Zayn's great. I loved him when he was El Generico. He's great as Sami Zayn. I really like him, but they're nothing against them. I mean, because Sin Cara is a great wrestler, Sami Zayn as well, and so is Zack Ryder. Great hand, but the build isn't strong enough to just put them in an Intercontinental title match. It's not their fault at all. It's just the build is very lackluster for me to really care about that. All right, we got a roll. Roman Reigns attacks Triple H. Didn't move the needle at all. I mean, just a really, it just didn't make any sense. Charlotte and Natalya to build the triple threat match. Bubba Ray Dudley and R-Truth. I guess their Golden Truth is back. Is kind of forming finally. Then the Usos makes the save after both of them get. Vince McMahon in-ring promo says if Undertaker does not defeat Shane McMahon at WrestleMania, it will be his last. This has been a couple minutes on this real quick. So this is kind of a, if you win, Shane's gone, but if you lose, you're gone match. It just makes it even more confusing to me. They're not building Taker as a heel at all. So how does it make sense to split the cheers on a match that Vince McMahon is the clear-cut heel, but his representative is a clear-cut babyface? It just doesn't make any sense to me at all.
None of it does. This whole match is just ridiculous, and I'm going to enjoy it. It's going to be a great match, but there's really nothing. There's no give or take. I mean, either outcome is going to be horrible, and it's not going to be good for business. So I don't really see, you know, the Undertaker isn't anyone's minion. If it is his last pay-per-view or his last WrestleMania, then evidently he's going to retire, and that'll be it. Shane, who knows what he's going to be doing. It's clear-cut as far as if he's going to stay with WWE or if he's going to be with this match and go off and do his thing. I want to see him take over Raw. I think he's an awesome personality for the business. So, I mean, that's pretty much give and take. What are you going to get from it?
Let's stay in the WrestleMania 3 vein, Derek. Who came out with Jake Roberts when he faced the Honky Tonk Man? And
Alice Cooper.
Huh, Alice Cooper, huh? Good job.
Yeah.
Very good job. And then Dean Ambrose and Braun Strowman, they're trying to protect Strowman's character. That's the reason why it seems it was a DQ. And I'm okay with protecting Strowman because, you know, give him some steam, build him up for like a SummerSlam match against Lesnar or Reigns. I'm totally fine with that. But, you know, a DQ finish and having Strowman win when you're trying to build up Dean Ambrose, I think it just would have made much more sense of the Wyatt family would have jumped Dean Ambrose when they saw he was having some steam. It would have made perfect sense to actually have Ambrose win by disqualification. Just those things makes a world of difference when it comes to building someone correctly.
A whole lot of this just doesn't make sense. I mean, the Raw last night was a bust. And again, with Ambrose, they just want to make him look like the absolute underdog. That just, you know, all odds are always going to be against him no matter what. But, again, we'll have him lose with DQ. It's, you know, it is what it was. It was cool to see him come out when Vince McMahon was still on the Titantron and just kind of push Vince McMahon aside or whatever. But what they're going to do with him, who knows. But they always try to make him look like the weaker person when he should be a little more than that. But, you know, it's the writing's on the wall and the writing sucks.
Yeah. Real quick, part two of the Diva statistics. We talked about a huge gap between WrestleManias and Leilani Kai being a part of both of those matches. Going in as champ and one and leaving and challenger. So we get 15 with Sable versus Tori, 2000. Or WrestleMania 16, Terry Runnels versus the Cat. Terry Runnels defeated the Cat. 17 was pretty good. China and Ivory. China won the women's championship. Pretty good. She was a babyface at the time. And then 18, Jazz versus Jazz defeated Lita and Trish Stratus. I was a fan of Jazz. I think Jazz was a pretty handy women's wrestler at the time. Real quick, Stan Hansen's in the Hall of Fame and inducted by Vader. Well deserved, man. I, I just had to go back real quick and watch some lariatos. And, oh, my goodness. That guy would just decapitate the heads.
Oh, my God. He just decapitated his darn head.
I just thought, man, I tell you, Stan Hansen was the man. His lariats were just, oh, I wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of any type of Stan Hansen lariat, period.
Of course not, man. I mean, the thing about him, he's just your tough guy. I mean, there's him, Harley Race, just absolute, just reeks of toughness. I mean, JBL, his clothesline from hell was, you know, just didn't mirror what the lariat was. So
it was good, but it wasn't the lariat.
It was believable, but it wasn't the lariat. And just to have Vader, I think, what was it? Hansen knocked Vader's eyeball out of his socket or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's disgusting. I don't even want to think about it, but, you know, glad. This sounds like it's shaping up to be a good Hall of Fame class, so I'm happy about that.
I agree. Real quick, flavor of the week.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
All right, so let's squeeze in. Let's try to squeeze in 17 to 24. So we have Kane defeating Big Show and Raven for the Hardcore Championship. Eddie Guerrero beating Test for the European Championship. Like I said, Chyna defeating Ivory for the Women's Championship. And Edge and Christian winning the Tag Team Championship at TLC. And then The Rock losing against Steve Austin for the WWE Championship. 17, look at all those title changes. 17 was just absolutely amazing to me. I want to see that back. 18, we have Regal losing its RVD for the Intercontinental Championship. We had Jericho losing to Triple H for the Undisputed Championship at 18. It was pretty tough following, the women's match was sandwiched in between that, but Rock Hogan was just on a class of its own. 19, Victoria losing to Trish Stratus, a triple threat match for the women's championship. Jazz was also included, like I said. And also Kurt Angle losing to Brock Lesnar for the Undisputed Championship. 20, WrestleMania 20, we had WrestleMania 20, it was Benoit winning triple threat for the Tag Team Championship. Very interesting. So, talk about your JR commentary, man. If anyone has a chance, watch that again. JR just absolutely hit a amazing home run in that commentary during that match. John Cena defeated JBL for the WWE Championship. Batista defeated Triple H for the World Heavyweight Championship at 21. Let's see if we can squeeze all of them in right quick and get your thoughts, Derek. 22, we saw Mickie James defeating Trish Stratus for the women's. JBL defeating Chris Benoit for the U.S. title. Kurt Angle losing to Rey Mysterio in the triple threat with Randy Orton for the World Heavyweight Championship. And then 23, we saw at 23, Undertaker beating Batista for the World Heavyweight Championship. And then finally, and then I'll get your thoughts real quick, Derek, at 24, we saw, as far as title changes is concerned, we saw Kane defeating Chavo Guerrero real quick for the ECW Championship and Edge losing to The Undertaker for the World Heavyweight Championship. All right, real quick, give me about 15 seconds. What was your most memorable one?
Rock losing to Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania 17, probably one of the top five WrestleManias of all time. Wasn't too happy about Stone Cold turning, you know, being friendly with Vince and whatever, but, you know, that's what wrestling is, folks. Pancakes and power slams for life.
I agree. Rock Austin for me, too. 17 was absolutely amazing, and that was definitely convincing. We're going to finish it out next week, 25 to 31. And then we'll also have the roundtable next week. Got a lot of fun stuff. Go home show to WrestleMania. Can you feel the excitement for WrestleMania? Thank you for Donovan Dijak being on the show. Great interview. Thank you so much for taking your time to chat with us tonight. Of course, at Crave Wrestling Twitter, Crave Wrestling Facebook. Until next week, enjoy your week of wrestling. Daddy loves my boys, and you are absolutely welcome. Have a good night. Enjoy. God bless. Goodbye.